Welcome to this episode of the UK Babies podcast, and today a session focused on women's health. Specifically, we're going to talk about pelvic girdle pain, most commonly experienced in pregnancy, but also sometimes in the postnatal period. And we're very lucky today to be joined by Helen Forth, who is a women's pelvic health physiotherapist with a whole host of experience in supporting women in the perinatal stage of their lives. So welcome, Helen, and thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, Mel.
So before we begin to get into the nitty-gritty of pelvic girdle pain, Helen, would you be able to just give us a bit of background about your career and your experiences as a specialist pelvic health physiotherapist?
So first and foremost, I'm a physiotherapist. I qualified in 1996. I can't quite believe that will be 25 years this summer? I was just thinking, hang on, have I got the maths right there? But frighteningly, it is. And quite quickly actually specialised in what was then called women's health physiotherapy, or even obstetric and gynaecological physiotherapy back in the olden days. So I went on and did a postgraduate qualification while I was working in women's health physiotherapy, as it was then, back in 2000. I also then did a master's in physiotherapy, which I finished in 2005. I wanted to do some research actually, and looked into the effectiveness of physiotherapy treatment for vulval pain and hypertonic pelvic floor muscles for my master's research dissertation. So I finished that in 2005, just before my first child was born. So my first child was born in 2006, and my second one in 2008. So there's a little bit of a gap there in terms of kind of further learning and stuff that went on. But later, when I was working in private practice, I also qualified to be an acupuncturist, so to use acupuncture as part of my physiotherapy training. So I'm not an expert in traditional Chinese medicine at all, but I am able to use acupuncture to treat physiotherapy related problems. So I finished that was in 2016. Around that same time, maybe a year or so later, I also became a mummy MOT practitioner. And in 2019, I qualified as a Pilates instructor, so with the Australian Physiotherapy and Pilates Institute, so a clinical Pilates instructor, mat work instructor at that stage. So like a lot of physios, I'm an eternal student, always learning, always developing. It's something that's drummed into us right from the outset, really. So yeah, that's my background from a kind of formal educational point of view. Professionally, I spent the first 15 years or so of my career working in the NHS. So I was lucky enough to do my rotations on first graduating at the Royal Free Hospital in London, which is a big teaching hospital in central London. And I was fortunate enough to do a rotation, so a 4-month kind of block of experience working within the women's health team there, towards the end of my junior rotation. So at the right time for when I was starting to think about what I might want to do as a specialist post. So timing was perfect from that point of view. I was introduced to women's health at just the right time in my career, really, and absolutely loved it. Gained some really invaluable experience. I was really fortunate to work within a team that was very dynamic, very research focused, and also very well respected, unusually perhaps back in those days, very well respected by consultant colleagues, taken very seriously, seen as a really important part of the obstetric and gynecology departments. Which was fantastic, really, really good grounding in all sorts of different areas of women's health, which was brilliant. And luckily for me, I was fortunate enough that the person who was in the post, kind of at the level above me, actually became pregnant herself and went on maternity leave, and I was asked to cover her post. So I did that for the period of her maternity leave and absolutely fell in love with the speciality, became very, very convinced that it was the area that I wanted to work in. And she then didn't come back from her maternity leave, so I was able to then take on her position. And weirdly enough, a couple of years later, the same thing happened with the person who was at the level above. So the next rung up within the team, she also became pregnant. I was asked to cover her maternity leave and did so. So before I knew it, and actually quite early on in my career, I was actually the clinical lead for the Women's Health Service at the Royal Free, which was brilliant. Something of a baptism of fire. To be quite early on in your career running a service and having to have discussions with managers and consultants about service development and funding and things like that was quite interesting. But it does mean I've got quite a sort of interesting and varied background in terms of my NHS career. Although it all took place in one trust, I have worked at quite a senior managerial level as well as senior clinical level too. So I feel very fortunate to have had that background, because I think that stands you in really good stead, in terms of experience going forward. So I worked at the Royal Free for about 15 years. I think it was 15 years. I finished there in 2011 and started working solely in private practice at that point. I had already been dabbling in private practice since my children had been born. So a lot of the consultants that I worked with at the Royal Free all did their private practice at the same clinic on Harley Street. And over the years, they slowly kind of worked away at me and persuaded me that I might like to do a little bit of private work there as well. So I started just doing a few hours once a fortnight, I think my clinic was, to begin with them, which was brilliant. So it gave me a chance to kind of put my toe in the water in terms of working in private practice. And then things, as you can imagine, got busier and busier with the private work, and I realised that actually it was quite nice being self-employed and having the flexibility to be able to kind of fit work in around the kids and family and stuff. So I took the step to working solely in private practice in 2011, and that's where I've been ever since. I'm not still working on Harley Street. I finished there a couple of years ago. So we moved out of London in 2012, and to begin with, I was commuting in to London a couple of days a week to continue my clinics there. But I, after a couple of years of doing that, started working locally as well, in Sudbury, actually, initially in Suffolk. And as I slowly managed to build up a practice locally, I then reduced the amount of time that I was going into London for. And then eventually, a couple of years ago, I then took the move to working solely in Suffolk. I kind of decided it was time to wave goodbye to my fix of going into the city and working in London, and made that step to just working out in Suffolk.
You are definitely a woman in the know, and as someone who works in the women's health industry, your knowledge and your experience fills me with absolute excitement. So I'm really pleased that we've been able to talk to you today and talk through some of the key issues that we know lots of our clients are faced with. So let's talk a little bit about pelvic girdle pain, and especially in pregnancy, because pelvic girdle pain is actually really common, isn't it? Many, many pregnant ladies suffer with some degree of discomfort in that area. What's been interesting for me over the past year or so as well is to really look at what pelvic girdle pain means in technical terms, because there's a few kind of different variations of language that have been used over the years, hasn't there, to describe pelvic girdle pain or pain within the pelvic area during pregnancy. So be interested to get your thoughts and explanation on that.
So historically, women may have come across a term, symphysis pubis dysfunction, which was a term that was used to describe pain experienced predominantly in the front of the pelvis at the pubic joint. And more recently, that has been replaced with the terminology pelvic girdle pain or pregnancy related pelvic girdle pain, to reflect the fact that often pain in the front of the pelvis, pain in the pubic joint, doesn't occur in isolation. It's actually very common for women to also experience pain in the back of the pelvis related to the sacroiliac joint. So pelvic girdle pain is a more general term, but used to describe pain in either the pubic joint or the sacroiliac joints, or a combination of the two things in pregnancy. And it is really common. I think one in five women in pregnancy supposedly will experience mild pelvic girdle pain. But actually, if you look at studies that include sacroiliac joint problems, so pain in the back of the pelvis and the low back, then you're, depending on what studies you look at, you're actually then looking at maybe 75% or more of pregnant women experiencing those sorts of aches and pains. So it's hugely, hugely prevalent. Often, unfortunately, sadly dismissed as being one of those things. And yeah, sadly, all too often I hear women who've been told, as we were saying before, well, you're pregnant, what do you expect? Of course it's going to hurt, which is just not helpful at all. So the change in terminology was more, I think, just to reflect the fact that it's very difficult to look at one joint in isolation in the body without considering the rest of the body, and with the pelvis in particular, because of the way it works as a unit. It's a ring, you know, it's not just the symphysis pubis joint, it is the two sacroiliac joints at the back where the pelvis joins with the bottom of the spine. So I guess the term is just helpful to reflect the fact that, yeah, you may experience pain in one or both of those areas at the same time in pregnancy.
Definitely. And obviously there everyone always wants to know the reasons why have I got this pain, what's causing it. And the problem is, as with most things in women's health, it's probably not just one thing, but it may be, but it's probably a combination of things, isn't it? So it'd be really good for just to run through some of the possible causes of pelvic girdle pain, and also maybe outline the holistic nature of the body and what happens during pregnancy that also brings along some of these aches and pains.
Absolutely. So there are obviously quite a lot of changes that go on in the body during pregnancy. As your bump grows, as your baby grows and develops, you are then carrying a growing load at the front of the body, which changes your centre of gravity. And that change in your centre of gravity is reflected in a change in your spinal curves and your posture. So that the body is always adapting and adjusting to that change in your centre of gravity and that load that you're carrying in front of your spine. And those changes in your spinal curves mean that we see lengthening of certain muscle groups, shortening of other muscle groups, tightening of certain connective tissue, fascia, and so on. And those problems, those changes, sorry, can go on to develop problems. They can become problems for some women, and there are certain risk factors that we know seem to predispose or increase somebody's chances of developing pelvic girdle pain. For example, the more pregnancy somebody has does seem to be a risk factor. Having a physical, very heavy manual job does seem to be a risk factor, or a job where there are awkward repetitive movements involved that put strain through the pelvis. Having had previous pelvic girdle pain is a risk factor for developing it in subsequent pregnancies, unfortunately, as is having an injury or a previous accident that affected your spine or your pelvis, you know, prior to pregnancy. So that, yeah, there are certain things that we know do increase somebody's chances of having problems. Another big one is if you've got pre-existing connective tissue problems. So for example, women who are hypermobile, who perhaps have hypermobility spectrum disorders or Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, are much more likely to have pelvic girdle pain in pregnancy. Definitely there are things that seem to increase somebody's chances of having problems, but not always. You know, sometimes it is unfortunately just one of those things, or it's multifactorial, you know, it can be a combination of some or all of those different factors. So
I've spoken to people before and also then seen that there is also this idea, and people have been told that pelvic girdle pain is due to an instability somewhere within the pelvis. And I thought that was a really interesting point for us to raise, because I think it's something that, you know, is worth exploring, because it's not actually necessarily true, is it?
Yeah, I mean, I think if I think back to when I first started working in this field, there was much more emphasis put on the effect that hormonal changes in pregnancy had on the body. So you might hear still, and certainly in the past, people will have talked about a particular hormone called relaxin, which was thought to have an impact on ligaments and cause a softness and stretchiness in ligaments, particularly around the pelvis in preparation for birth. And poor old relaxin was often given the blame for pregnancy-related aches and pains, pelvic girdle pain in particular. And it was thought that that increased flexibility in the ligaments that support and stabilise the pelvis, the change in those ligaments would therefore make the pelvis unstable, meaning that it was more mobile than it ought to be, and that therefore made it more vulnerable to injury, inflammation, aches and pains, and so on. But actually there has been a move away from looking at it with that kind of viewpoint in the last few years. And actually the impact, the effect of relaxin on the body and as a potential cause for pelvic girdle pain hasn't been proven at all. I'm not sure that it's categorically disproven, but it hasn't been proven. So there is definitely a step away from blaming, if you like, the problems that people have on hormonal changes. And there is definitely a change in the language that we tend to use when we describe problems that occur in pregnancy to women, because the thought of your pelvis being unstable is quite scary. It's quite an intimidating concept, isn't it? The idea that your pelvis, which is basically, you know, there is a protection and support for your growing baby at the moment, the idea that that's somehow failing you, that it's unstable, is really quite quite difficult to get your head around, and not particularly encouraging or pleasing thing to think about. And so we tend to talk about and think much more in terms of joints that have perhaps become less mobile. So often you'll see perhaps that one side of the pelvis is more mobile than the other, and it can be beneficial to focus on the side of the pelvis that is looking a little bit stuck as a result of tight muscles, perhaps to do with the biomechanical changes that have gone on in pregnancy, and to focus more on mobilizing and calming down tissues and so on, rather than thinking about stability or instability and perhaps relaxing as being a very handy scapegoat for the cause of pelvic girdle issues. But I think we're still learning in this area, you know, but certainly, you know, pregnancy takes its toll. It's a tough marathon for women to run, and clearly your body undergoes significant changes that do have an impact on the musculoskeletal system and do mean that we are prone to certain conditions developing. But what's really important is treating each person as an individual, you know, assessing and understanding in this particular woman's case, what is it that may be contributing to the pain that she's experiencing? You know, is it actually more tied up with fear and past experiences of pain or previous injuries? Or is it to do with stiffness and joints not moving, or fear of movement because of the pain that they've been experiencing? You know, so it's really important to understand and unpick what's going on in any one individual's life and to address those problems, rather than looking for a sort of blanket, you know, catch-all explanation for somebody's symptoms that you can perhaps fob somebody off with, which, you know, I think perhaps historically may have been what happened for some people, unfortunately.
Yeah, and it's an interesting point you raise, isn't it, about when we talk about maybe it's fear or fear of the pain, because beyond the biomechanical changes and the biomechanical issues that impact us, we also now know that pelvic girdle pain, pelvic issues of any type, can also be hugely influenced and contributed to by things like stress, lack of sleep.
Absolutely, which is why, you know, these things are always multifactorial. You know, there's very rarely is there sort of one particular thing that's the contributing factor. There are so many different issues. And yes, you know, we know the abdominal muscles lengthen and weaken in pregnancy. We know that the abdominal muscles have a role to play in terms of providing support to the pelvis and the low back. So yes, you know, that could be a factor. But as you say, there's so many other things, and definitely stress, anxiety, poor nutrition, even lack of sleep, all of these things can contribute. You know, and if you think about a mum who's perhaps not pregnant for the first time, you know, but is looking after other young children, and you then factor in, you know, the busyness and the juggle and the stress, and yes, perhaps the lack of sleep, you know, that may go along with that. You know, it's not surprising then that we do see that the prevalence of things like pelvic girdle pain is increased in women when it's not their first pregnancy. You know, if you start to think about what those women are also doing apart from just being pregnant, you know, it's perhaps not surprising, is it, that they may be more likely to have problems.
And I think it just reiterates again, doesn't it, that as women, we really need to view our bodies in this holistic way and view any form of self-care that we provide to ourselves as needing to have like a holistic format. It's not just necessarily about, you know, realigning or like making sure that we're getting length. It's about really addressing your whole life and all those other environmental factors that can have an impact on us physically and mentally, yeah. Because the mental state really does have an impact on the physical state, doesn't
Absolutely.
It?
Absolutely. Sometimes people are surprised, you know, when they come to see me about pain and I start talking to them about, you know, how is your life in general? How are you coping? Are you stressed at work? Are you happy in your relationship? You know, what else is going on? Are you eating well? You know, are you sleeping okay? And you can see people, you know, the cogs are whirring and they're thinking, well, hang on, how are you just really nosy? How is this relevant actually? You know, do I need to divulge all this information to you? But actually it's all part of that jigsaw puzzle that helps you to understand what it is that's contributing, you know. And pain is such an interesting thing. You know, it's so important to remember that pain does not equal tissue damage. You know, pain is the body's warning signal, and that's so important to understand. It's a warning that something's not right. It doesn't mean there's damage. And I think it's so important that people hear that and understand that. And I think if you can understand that therefore there's nervous system involvement and what's going on with our nervous system in general, you know, whether we're in kind of fight or flight mode constantly because we're stressed and anxious and too busy with work or whatever it might be, you know, to understand that that can be affecting our perception of our symptoms and how we're feeling, is really important, isn't it?
Definitely. So I think if, you know, if you are pregnant and you're suffering with pelvic girdle pain, the first recommendation would be to go and see a specialist and get yourself checked out by a physiotherapist and really understand, you know, where, what the real underlying causes of that might be. But beyond that, Helen, do you have any tips or advice for people from a self-management point of view or anything that can help reduce those symptoms, even if they have gone to seek, you know, treatment? What can we do for ourselves too, beyond exercises we might then be given, etc.?
Yeah, there is quite a lot that you can do. You know, you can be proactive, certainly in pregnancy, to manage aches and pains. I would say one of the most important things that I could advise is to not be frightened of moving. Movement is really important. The body needs to be able to move in and out of certain postures. We need to be able to function, you know, in our daily life, and none of us spend our lives rigid in one particular posture all day. So don't be scared to move, don't be scared to change position, but respect your pain, respect your symptoms. So if, for example, you have pelvic girdle pain and it's affecting the pubic joint, the joint at the front of the pelvis, classically women will feel symptoms there when they do activities that involve things like putting all their weight through one leg, so standing to get dressed, you know, putting their socks and shoes on, standing on one leg, climbing up and down stairs, walking, or activities that involve you taking your knees apart, like getting in and out of the car, for example. So one really easy thing that you can do that can make a huge difference from that point of view is to try to do those certain activities, keeping your knees together, you know, getting in and out of the car, ladylike fashion, you know, bottom first, and then bringing both legs in together, or thinking about trying to keep your knees together as you roll over in bed, because that's often a movement that will cause problems for people. or sitting down to put your tights or your socks and shoes on or your trousers or whatever, you know, rather than doing things that involve you with a prolonged stand on one leg and difficulty with the load transfer then. So definitely you can modify your activities and the way that you do certain day-to-day things, and that can make a huge difference to people's symptoms. Some people will find using ice quite helpful to calm down if there is any inflammation around a joint. That can be quite useful. Don't ever apply it direct to the body. You know, if you're going to use a bag of frozen peas or something like that, make sure you wrap it in a damp tea towel before you pop it on the body, and only leave it there for 10 to 15 minutes, not longer than that. But that for some women can be a real lifesaver, actually. It can help hugely. Pelvic support belts can have a part to play for some people as well, but I would say, on, you know, with an assessment, you know, because they're not the answer for everybody, but there are certain belts that are fantastic and can, for the right woman, make a huge difference. And that's something that a specialist physio could advise on. And some of us will stock certain ones in our clinics and be able, you know, you'll be able to try them and see what's comfy for you. Yeah, so a belt can be helpful. For some people, just slowing down a little bit, you know, the pain may be a warning that you're doing too much. So perhaps having to accept that it's time to slow down a little bit. You know, certainly if you've got pelvic girdle pain, you might want to look at what you're doing from a high impact, high intensity exercise point of view. It might be time to back off a little bit in terms of what you're doing from that point of view, and to look at something that's a bit more on the sort of nurturing and restorative end of the spectrum: pregnancy yoga, pregnancy Pilates, swimming. But be careful of breaststroke legs. The breaststroke leg action can be a real irritating factor for some people. But yeah, certainly, you know, looking at those kind of things for some people can be helpful too. And there is a place for some people for manual therapy, soft tissue release, massage, you know, go for a nice massage. And then look at, you know, can you do anything to improve your sleep? Is there a way, can you work on your sleep hygiene? You know, is it that you need to leave your phone downstairs? Is it that you need to be getting yourself to bed a bit earlier, or having a bath with lavender, you know, before you go to bed? Is there something that you can be doing from that point of view? Is there a way of managing your stress? Do you need to look at, you know, starting some mindfulness or meditation or something like that? And also looking at your nutrition, you know, are you eating well? Are you getting plenty of protein? You know, because that's going to help from a sort of tissue healing point of view. You know, that sort of thing is also definitely worth paying some attention to.
Definitely. There's lots of things, as we said, that we need to look at in this holistic format to try and reduce as many symptoms as humanly possible, because it does all have a factor, doesn't it? What about, Helen, for people that continue to suffer from pelvic girdle pain post-birth? Common, not common, you know, how?
Yeah, definitely less common, for sure. I mean, I think once upon a time, people were often told to expect it just to magically disappear as soon as they've had the baby. And that's not always the case. And obviously, if you've been told that your problem is just going to disappear as soon as you've had the baby, and then it doesn't, that can be quite distressing, and can obviously then also be quite scary, because you're not quite sure what that means for your future and whether you're going to be stuck with these problems forever or not. But I have to say, for the vast majority of people, symptoms often are much better postnatally. It doesn't necessarily mean they've magically gone, but they often are much better postnatally. But not for everybody. And in fact, some women will develop pelvic girdle pain postnatally, having not had any problems antenatally. So it's definitely, you know, delivering the baby is definitely not a kind of magic wand in terms of symptoms disappearing. And we do see some people who've had more severe, more significant problems in pregnancy. You know, occasionally I've known women who've needed crutches or even a wheelchair in pregnancy, and potentially those people will go on and have more problems for a longer period of time postnatally. But it tends to be the more severe cases And then, yes, as I said, some people can develop problems postnatally, but that's less common. And sometimes that can be, as unfortunately, as a result of something that's happened during delivery. We do see that occasionally. You know, if the baby has needed to be delivered for whatever reason very quickly, and it's been quite abrupt, and there's not really been the time to consider how wide apart or somebody's legs are, if things haven't gone to plan from that point of view, then potentially somebody may unfortunately have problems postnatally. And occasionally we see people who've gone back to perhaps high impact exercise too early postnatally developing problems as well. So that can be a factor for some people. But I would say for the vast majority, people will often feel better postnatally than they did in pregnancy, but not that things sort of magically disappear.
Thank you, Helen. It's been an absolute pleasure to chat to you today, and a really great chance for us to perhaps make sure people are made more aware about some of the causes and indeed treatments that can be used to help pelvic girdle pain. So I really thank you for your time.
Not a problem. Thank you for asking me. It's been a pleasure to talk to you.
And thank you for listening to this podcast. Watch out for our promotion of episode 2 with Helen coming soon, where we discuss the often misunderstood postnatal diastasis or diastasis recovery journey. For now, goodbye, take care, and we'll speak to you all very soon.